What's up, founders, and welcome to the In Demand podcast, where we talk all about how to troubleshoot growth for your PLG SaaS. I'm your co-host, Asia Arangio, the CEO and founder of Demand Maven.
And I'm Kim Talarczyk, client services manager at Demand Maven, where we help SaaS companies reach their toughest growth milestones.
All right, Kim, let's get into it. I think today I'd like to talk about fractional CMO.
Ooh, that's a good topic.
Yeah. And I like it too because it's work that I've been doing for the past few months. Mm-hmm. I've been working with a company for the last, basically since mid-February. So depending on when this comes out, TBD on how many months, but mid-February 2025, started working with a company as fractional CMO. And I've been here before, so not at this specific company, but I was fractional CMO by accident for three years for a company called Uplisting. And I say by accident because I really didn't position it that way to the founder.
Right.
But that's basically what ended up happening.
Yeah.
Basically was fractional CMO. Yeah. For 3 years. And also I kind of just assumed that at any moment, you know, they would cancel the retainer and then they didn't. And I was shocked. And then we exited, and then I was even more shocked because I was like, oh wow. Did not see that coming really, but it was a great exit. It was very wonderful for the founders and the team. So I'm happy it happened, obviously. But it's just funny how like that was an accidental fractional CMO role. This one is far more intentional. So this is the retainer that I'm offering. And I think it's such an interesting idea, especially for bootstrapped companies to consider. And yeah, I just kind of wanted to get into all the ins and outs of like fractional CMO and
Yeah. It's a good topic. And I guess we could start with why would you hire a fractional CMO versus a full-time CMO?
Yeah. The easiest answer, the simplest answer, I should say, is it really can come down to cost and also bandwidth. So you might not be able to hire or afford a full-time CMO, which minimum salary range is like 200K, 250K in the US at least. So that's number one. So fractional enables you to access incredible talent while maybe not paying for the full-time cost of that. And then second is usually a bandwidth constraint. You might not need the energy of a full-time CMO. You might only need them part-time because a CMO isn't necessarily someone who is literally like executing the work. A CMO is someone who is ultimately hiring the team, inspiring the team, and hopefully never firing the team, but ultimately ensuring that budget and strategy are always in check. So to me, a CMO's role in general is budget, strategy, and team. Mm-hmm. And some would argue that the order is different depending on the company, where budget is always number one. Like we have to keep our costs within a certain amount. CMO and CFO are often usually best buds. And then hopefully CMO and CSO, Chief Sales Officer or Chief Revenue Officer, are also best buds, ideally. Of course, every company can look different. But CMO is ultimately responsible for the marketing branch, we have to keep our costs within X amount. And also, we should be seeing a certain ROI from that as well. Mm-hmm. In some organizations, budget is always number one, no matter what. And then it kind of flips between, is strategy second priority or is team second priority? And I think, again, just depends on the organization and the team and the context. But strategically speaking, the CMO is responsible for what is the ultimate strategy and the vision for how this marketing function is deployed in the organization. And that can trickle down into one brand, several brands, global, local. Like it just, again, it depends on the organization and how big this could be. When I think about the CMO at Freshworks, for example, Mika, I believe. So mm-hmm. she, I imagine for her, I mean, budget obviously is number one for her probably. Then it's strategy because Freshworks has many different products and also they have a global brand. They are also publicly traded, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they're a public company. So she's likely thinking, okay, what is the vision for marketing for all of these entities? How does this look at a global scale? Et cetera, et cetera. And then the third prong, probably the most crucial prong, because a chief leader is likely not the one literally rolling up their sleeves and executing. They have a team. So the third prong is, who is the team? Who's doing what? Who's responsible for what? How is it structured? How is it layered? And how does this roll out depending on how many brands or products or markets you have?
So you're when a CMO is coming in, whether fractional or full-time, there already is some sort of marketing team in place. Is that correct?
So this is interesting because technically it doesn't have to be this way, but it is implied that the CMO would be hiring. You wouldn't hire a CMO, for example, and then tell them they can't hire anybody, not even an agency or a contractor. Right. That wouldn't make sense. You're probably over hiring if that's the case. You might need to actually pare back the role into more of a head of marketing or possibly even a product marketing manager or like a marketing manager, depending on what it is that you actually need them to do. But a CMO is the implication is that they are either going to lead the marketing team or they are going to build the marketing team. And there is enough budget to actually do that. And also runway, because runway is a critical point here too. You wouldn't hire a CMO with a year's worth of runway, for example. You probably would hire a CMO with 2 to 3 years of runway or more. Or if you are not a, maybe if you are an actual profitable company where it's not funded, then maybe it's actually more like, you know, like within your rule of 40, your margin of 40, you are able to hire someone within that capacity. And then there is, again, budget to actually build out some kind of team. Doesn't have to be a fully like internal or in-house team. The CMO could oversee agencies, contractors, freelancers, but the idea is that they're actually not the ones who are executing the work, but they are guiding the work, they're leading the work, and they're inspiring the people to do the work.
Got it. Yeah. So they could be coming in and hiring or coming in and immediately managing what's there or both, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's funny because there are still people who break the rules. I say this, but there are CMOs I know who do execute. They might not actually have a team yet, but because of their strategic level, they are able to maybe execute short term, but eventually they're the head. So like they oversee an entire department eventually.
So that's the difference then. If you have a VP of marketing or a head of marketing, they potentially could be executing more than a CMO level.
Definitely. Definitely.
Got it. So CMO assumes more. They're focusing on the strategy. They're focusing on the budget. Is mm-hmm. there a point where there is a VP or a head of marketing and other teams or teammates or agencies underneath them? At what point then do you need more of that CMO level?
Yeah. So this is always like the controversial yet brave take. But it's just because I think a lot of CEOs and founders hire heads of marketing expecting them to be CMOs, but they're not. And there definitely is a certain leveling up that has to happen for a head of marketing to evolve into a CMO or a VP to evolve into the CMO level. But honestly, like the biggest difference is their ability to make decisions, strategically think about certain problems. And also, how much has that CMO seen? Experience does matter a lot here. Mm. But that's not to say that a head of marketing could never become a great CMO. Of course they can. Like that's how CMOs start. I was a head of marketing once. I know exactly what that looks like. The difference, I think, is the head of marketing, in order to become a CMO, really needs to start thinking like two ways. I think the first is they need to be thinking like a CEO. And how do you make strategic decisions at very high level and also within certain landscapes and contexts, and knowing that there are parameters that you can pull and knowing that there are parameters that like you're not beholden to necessarily. And then similarly, you also have to learn how to think like a CFO. And I think a great CMO is like a CEO, a CFO, and like a chief vision officer, if you will. I think mm-hmm. that a great CMO is those with a deep understanding of how marketing works. And that to me is how a head of marketing can become a CMO. But in truth, CMO kind of is low key just a title. Like, but I do think that there are very real implications of a CMO ultimately is that strategic layer. And also a CMO has to ensure that the people who can execute are there. You've got the right people in the right seats and that they are enabled. Mm-hmm. And of course, you are sticking to that budget or that ROI requirement that you have to be hitting. Otherwise, the math doesn't math and you don't have a business that is profitable or efficient or whatever. And I think a good CMO understands how to balance all those things. But I think at the head of marketing level, usually heads of marketing are really concerned with channel and marketing level strategy, which is, you know, are my programs running efficiently? Who's going to execute that program? Is it me or is it going to be a contractor or is it going to be an agency? What are the efficiency levels of each of these programs and channels? What are new channels? What do the customers think? And I think a CMO ultimately has an understanding of this, but they are really trusting the people who are responsible for that to give them the most accurate information. I think a good CMO can kind of peel back the layers and really question certain numbers. Mm. So for example, if your paid ads agency is, yeah, we've gotten, you know, 200 trials in the last month. And it's okay, how much of that was new demand versus demand on our own brand? And it's okay, 90% of it was our own brand. 10% of it was net new demand. Okay, that seems like that's a balance that we have to correct. Like a good CMO obviously understands enough about these channels and these programs to be able to peel back layers and really question certain things and make sure that what we're looking at is actually true and accurate. But then beyond that, it's like CMO, I think, is really trusting their leaders and their executors to deliver, but also to report as accurately as possible.
Give them the metrics on channel performance and all that, how the campaigns are running. And then you had mentioned on the CMO level, ensuring ROI. So obviously that's a key metric that the CMO is looking at. What else is the CMO looking at that top level?
Yeah. So one thing I do want to mention and make really clear is that I think a lot of founders and execs, if they're not familiar with working with experienced marketing leaders, then they may conflate these two things. But there's a difference between like strategic high level thinking at the marketing mm-hmm. level and strategic thinking within channels. So I can be strategic about how I execute Google Ads. That's a very strategic head of marketing kind of level. Yeah. Then there's like at the CMO level, there's markets, geolocations, products, especially if you have more than one product. And then there's what investments do we make for each of those? And then at certain levels, because when I was on the board of Moz, for example, we didn't have just one product, we had four. There was Moz Local, there was main primary Moz, like the regular SaaS platform that most people are probably familiar with, and there was Moz Stat. So there could actually be several brands within one organization that the CMO has oversight over, and all the teams and all the metrics and all the stats and all the things that come with each of those. Not always. Sometimes, I mean, obviously, like you can be a CMO of one product and that'd be enough. Mm-hmm. But that's the level of, I guess, like oversight that a CMO could have, especially if you have a more complex organization. The less complex doesn't necessarily, or I guess the less robust, I'll say, doesn't necessarily mean less complex. It just means, you know, there are just different moving parts. But there is a big difference between that marketing strategy, like that high level strategic, versus I'm thinking strategically about channels or programs, maybe not necessarily markets or products or even geography, regions, etc.
And then, you know, something like product marketing, right? That would fall under the CMO's umbrella.
Yeah. When I think about like the functions of marketing that a CMO would oversee, yeah, product marketing, demand generation, brand, then you get into, of course, like hiring. Hiring is a huge part of a CMO's job, or at least it should be. Otherwise, you don't need to hire a CMO. You need to hire someone else. Someone, maybe someone who's lower level, but can still like manage a contractor or a freelancer. A CMO is usually concerned with retention and also ideally strategic outsourcing. So not outsourcing everything, obviously, but what can be outsourced that would make sense versus right. bringing in-house, et cetera. So you yep. have to, like who you hire and where and when you outsource is actually crucial. It can have a huge impact on how the business grows. And also understanding, too, when certain things exhaust. So, for example, I am going to make the strategic decision to outsource SEO for now to an individual, like a consultant rather than an agency. Eventually, though, I know we're going to outgrow that person. We're going to need to eventually either bring on an agency or bring this in-house. I won't know, though, which one we're going to do until we get closer to that point. But my guess is we'll probably upgrade to a different type of agency that has like more staff and can do more like robust things. But we will absolutely outgrow this person. I know that. That's a known known. But in the meantime, we can still make a ton of progress and see results on the back end. So anyway, so hiring is obviously a part of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And there is overall strategy, which I've mentioned. And you can kind of think about this like product marketing. There is also a huge space, or I want to make sure we leave space too for sales enablement and working with sales. And then after that, it really just becomes about what are the programs that you are going to invest in that, again, like if you have several products or if you only have one, and then also if you have several segments, geographic regions, markets, et cetera, et cetera. And you really have to think about how are we tackling each of those core areas that we need to be in. And then similarly, because, you know, you're not going to be able to do it all. So I think a good CMO also understands and knows when to turn off certain things and to say, okay, this doesn't seem to be the best focus for us, or whether that's program or customer segment or market or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There is also a large component too. And I think some CMOs would agree with this. And I think others might say it's actually someone else's job. But I do think a CMO has some level of responsibility for attribution and analytics. And attribution is kind of like a dirty word now because it's getting harder. Google's doing all kinds of things. Apple's doing all kinds of things that's making attribution almost impossible. But there is a certain level of data management and business intelligence that a CMO has to know when to leverage and know how to build that function, whether you outsource it or have an internal either or, and using that to inform decisions that you're making at the business level.
Right. Yeah. So really a lot of it is knowing when and who to pull people in and out and managing all that, which is not an easy job.
Oh yeah. It's huge. And like when I think about like Mika, for example, CMO of Freshworks, how would you even know what to do when? I don't even like that. That's like a scale that I'm like still wrapping my brain around. But then I think about, you know, when I was on the board of Moz, Christina Motz was the CMO. And, you know, that we weren't like huge, huge, but we were a pretty sizable company. But we had four products. And when I think about the complexity within each of those, that seemed, I think the way that she managed it was very successful in that, like, she just, I don't know, I guess it's kind of like anything. It's kind of like having four clients. It's like each of these products is a client. And you just have to really deeply understand how all these moving parts work within one. And Moz had several geographic regions. The team was spread across a few different centers, I'll say. I think there were certainly some folks who were distributed, but there were like Seattle was a main hub, for example. Ireland, we had some folks there. But yeah, there's just a certain level of complexity, I think, that makes the CMO role really interesting because of how big and hairy it gets. But I also think, to be fair, though, you know, Christina at Moz wasn't doing it all by herself. Like she had a huge team. Mika at Freshworks definitely isn't doing it by herself. She has also a huge team. Like she also has layers built into that. So there are VPs of various functions, and those VPs oversee teams of individual contributors and managers.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is just one big soup that has to just work together and taste good. Otherwise, it's a no-go. It's not going to do what you want. And then that's just marketing. Like marketing still depends on other functions. Like you still depend on sales and product and all the other things in the business. So you're not in this silo. So CMO, I think, has to also work with those other players.
Right. They need to be able to operate at that, across that whole executive level.
Yeah. And I think too, like I said, so the company that I'm working with now is it's, you know, just one product, smaller team, but fractional makes sense. And this is kind of going back to one of your early questions, which is, you know, why fractional versus full-time? Fractional makes sense for them because they need that strategic oversight, but they're not at a place yet where they need it full-time. The team is not huge. The business is not huge, but it's clear that there's like this, the CEO in particular is like, you know, I'm not the smartest person in the room when it comes to marketing. And even then, like, I can only guide the team so much before I'm empty handed. And so I need someone who can help, you know, support and be the brains behind the operation. But we don't need that person full time and couldn't afford them full time even if we wanted to. That doesn't make sense to hire because we're just not that, you know, like we're not there yet. Both like revenue financially, but also time. And I think one of the telltale signs of you probably should consider fractional is if you felt like adding an extra 10 to 15 to 20 hours a week would unlock your team and help you move faster, make better decisions, make better investments, it's worth considering.
Mm.
But if you find that even at 20 hours, and this is how you know you need to hire full time, actually. If let's say you're getting the 15 to 20 hours, but your executive team is running circles around that fractional CMO, then you need to hire full time. Because like to me, like the telltale sign for hiring full time is either someone's in place or someone's not. But if someone's in place and they're not full time, they should be full time if they're the ones who are constantly behind the ball because everyone else is just moving faster than they are because they are full time. Like that to me is a sign. And if you don't have anyone in place, then you know you probably need some type of CMO or chief leader. And it might not need to be a CMO. It might just need to be a VP. There are certainly scenarios where a VP would be enough. But whether it's VP or CMO, you know you need one when you're no longer able to lead that marketing function because usually marketing is led by the CEO. Yep. Sometimes it's led by sales, but it's rare. But if you have a PLG company, probably the CEO is running marketing. And if the CEO is not a good CMO, it'll be very obvious because you'll probably be shaking each other's hand all the time. Oh man, like we met all of our goals, but we're not growing. Or it's you keep making investments in things and they're not paying off either because we're not doing them enough or it's because we're missing other key programs or initiatives that would support that thing. The other way you can tell is if you've got a lot of different moving parts in marketing, you've got someone leading demand gen, you've got someone doing ABM over here, you've got someone doing product marketing, you've got someone doing, let's say, like community or content marketing or whatever. You've got all of these different players, but you're having a really hard time wrapping your arms around how they're working, what they're working, what the investments are strategically, like where to go next, what is the actual ROI of all of this. That's where you might, again, need to consider either hiring a VP or a CMO, either one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's interesting because I think that there are a lot of people who are like self-proclaimed CMOs. And maybe I fit into this category in a way. But like, I have also learned that you have to be careful because there are a lot of people who have this title, but who are not. And you and I have, we just recently went through a hiring sprint for a client. And we met a lot of like VPs of marketing. I'm putting this in finger quotes. But then when you talk to them, they like don't give that vibe at all. And
right.
I think, so to be fair, this is not an easy thing to hire for. I think you do have to be, selective. I recommend trial periods. So before you really commit to a fractional CMO or even a full-time CMO or a VP, there should absolutely be like a 90-day trial period. Especially if they're fractional, this flies more than like, you've hired like a true executive and like they're full time.
Right.
But I think that you should absolutely think about doing like a 90-day trial period, making sure that this makes sense. Because before you roll your whole team under this new person who might not be the right fit, or if there is no team, before you have this person build a team that's going to report to them, you just want to make sure that this is the right fit for you and that it makes sense. And you'll have a strong sense of that after the first 90 days, I find.
And are you looking for people that have experience in similar industries, or you know, they have to have so much SaaS experience?
With a chief, I would expect you are looking for the highest level of fit as you possibly can, because the wrong chief that's such a brutal mistake.
Yeah,
because the whole team reports to that person. Sorry, not the whole team, but like the whole marketing team reports to that chief, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if there isn't a marketing team, they're going to report to that person. Nothing is more painful to me than having to rip out a chief. Even though CMOs, I think the average tenure is like 1 to 2 years.
Is it?
It is. It's something really small. And I have heard the stat almost all my life. And yet it still inspires me to actually try my hand. Maybe I could do this despite the super short tenure. But from what I understand, the number one reasons why CMOs tend to fail, and there are some who have come out and stated that maybe failure actually isn't leaving after 1 to 2 years. Maybe that's actually not failure. Maybe it's actually like a sign of success and they just, okay, let's go to the next company and turn it around, you know, whatever. But for those who see it as a sign of failure, one of, I think, the big commentaries about that was that they either didn't have the buy-in that they thought from other executive leaders, or it could have been they weren't meeting all of the demands or requirements of the CEO or even CFO. But I think like one of the number one qualms was these leaders weren't managing the work like an executive. They're kind of more almost like giving away power that they actually are the ones who have, but that creates like dysfunction, basically, which not an easy job for anybody. But it's interesting because like the tenure can be short. And so you do want to make sure you've got the right person is really what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And you'll have a better sense of that in the first 90 days, especially if they're fractional. There are some chiefs though, like there are certainly executive level positions where it's like you do an interim type role. That is one way to kind of hedge if you're just not sure. But we were talking about experience. And I think to me, like you need a high level of fit from like an experience and skills level. If you know that you need a solid leader and visionary and manager, maybe don't hire like the operational person who doesn't give people the warm fuzzies. If you need the warm fuzzy person, like you need to be able to identify that quality.
Yes.
In someone.
They need proven experience in those areas. The team management side of it is such a big part of it. You know, that's really important.
And it's interesting too, because again, CMOs come in all kinds of different flavors. There are some CMOs who like, they're really more like the brand visionary, warm, fuzzy feeling, kissing babies type vibe. And then there's like the very operational CMO who's, you know, very highly data driven and very structured and yada, yada, yada.
Which one are you?
Oh my God. Which one am I?
Or it doesn't have to be one or the other. What's your flavor?
I want to hear your answer, and then I'm going to give you mine, but I do want to hear your answer.
Okay.
I think my vibe, it's so funny because I kind of feel like I'm learning my vibe, even though I have a particular way about running my client projects, but I feel like it's hard to get a sense of style until like you're actually in a company. I think my style is, I think I'm like 60-40 visionary operational. 60%, I'm like, I can see this. Like I can see this so clearly, but I'm not necessarily like the Steve Jobs visionary. Not like that. Like I'm not inventing something that doesn't already exist. It's more like I see this business and I see this function and I know exactly what it needs to be to get where we want to go. And so now that 40% is the operational slash like strategic. And I am now going to apply that to make the vision real. But I want to clarify vision here because this is not like Steve Jobs' vision where it's like I'm downloading messages from the universe of the future and what it's going to look like. It's more just like from a practical perspective, this is what the function should look like and how it should work and how it should feel while also still creating space for innovation and inspiration and creativity. But the baseline is that strategic operational level. Foundational is what I would also add to that. But when I think about other CMOs that I know, like when I think about like Hannah Abaza or even April Dunford, because, you know, April Dunford, she's positioning and messaging extraordinaire now, but she's what, like a 8-time VP or CMO?
Mm-hmm.
Like she's been VP of marketing and CMO, I feel like several times over now. And when I think of her and Tara Roberson, who I believe is at Bitly now. Yes. When I think about them and kind of like where they fall, I feel like they're probably very similar. And then I think of Rand Fishkin, who I feel like Rand has like a connection to some like analytics or data god that is just like downloading messages into his brain all the time because he extracts insights and has so much vision that I'm like, I don't even know where you're getting this. Who? But I think it's divine, truly. I really do believe that Rand has like a divine connection somehow and he can see a little bit of the future. Because he's really the one whose attribution is dying. This is the internet's going to change. AI is going to take over. Like things like that. I would say I'm far less that. Not to say that I can't see that. Oh, okay, I see what you see now. But I'm just not the one. I don't have that divine connection to the universe. The world is going to have a device in their hand and it's going to be called the iPhone. That's just not.
Right.
That's not me. But but I'm okay with that.
Yeah. No, that's like where I would peg you as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Like visionary, but not Steve Jobs level, Rand Fishkin level. But but vision combined with operations. But not operations, but more, okay, now where do the team members need to go in order to execute this? Sort of like being that like operational, but at that strategic level where it's like moving puzzle pieces around. So that's to me like that visionary strategic side of you is kind of like that.
And I think, and maybe operation is the wrong word, but I definitely see this as structured. Like this, like the concept of marketing as a function is relatively structured with some room for totally unstructured, because some things just are not predictable. And also you do have to just be able to jump on stuff when stuff happens.
Right.
The amount of memes that I've been seeing about, oh my gosh, were you online when Spirited Away, everyone was turning their like photos into Studio Ghibli type images. And then every brand jumped on it, and some of it was cute, but some of it was like, okay, whatever, cringe. But that's the type of stuff, like, you just have to create room for being able to react to things like that.
Yes, yes. Those and sort of so viral grassroots opportunities.
So I'm not, like, you know, structured to a fault, but so much of my superpower is creating structure where there is none, and while still creating room for some of that creativity to actually happen. But I appreciate that. I agree with that. I try to keep a balance, though, because, you know, you do have to have that, you know, you do have to be able to step away and just be able to see everything at the high level. Right. And also objectively, which is so hard. Even now, I'm like, man, this like remaining objective is actually probably one of the hardest things, because our brains are wired to be subjective and to bias. Mm-hmm. And I know that as someone who does tons of research and all types of, you know, bias analysis, like in our customers, even and in our clients' customers. But observing it in yourself is so hard, because you're like, I know I'm being biased right now, but is that a bad thing or is that actually an okay thing? Because, you know, you still have to be able to make decisions with, you know, what, 60% of the information.
So yeah, and there's still some intuitiveness that does play into the role and just this in general. But of course, you can't rely solely on a gut feeling.
Exactly. Exactly. I guess there is one thing I will say about it. First, I do love it. It's a lot of fun. I just forgot what it was like, but it hasn't been that long. It's only been like a year since uplisting exited.
Yeah.
But all that to say, I did miss, being on a team, even part-time, is a lot of fun. One of the things I will say that is the most challenging aspect of it, but I think the biggest risk about a fractional CMO or any chief really is, again, when the other execs are running circles around that person. That has not happened yet. But there will come a time where it might. And I think the hardest thing is just like keeping a dial on that, because I want to be the first person. It's also my job to recognize when I'm actually the one holding everybody back. We're not there yet. We're at least a year or two away from that.
Yeah.
At least. And even then. But yeah, so like my number one thing right now is obviously it's my job, like, to make sure things are going and doing the thing. And we are either reaching our goals or we very deeply understand why we didn't meet them. But the thing I'm looking out for is like when other departments catch up, so to speak. Because when we were at uplisting, I feel like marketing was ahead of sales and product. And it kind of was that way almost the entire time. What I mean by ahead is like we were moving at a faster pace than the other departments. And also, I think the results that we were generating were also like way more than what everyone else was expecting. So product was kind of under a lot of pressure to like push features really quickly. And then sales was under a lot of pressure to start testing like outbound and generating their own or capturing their own demand or generating their own demand, I guess. And because really 100% of revenue really was marketing generated and a good portion of it was sales assisted. Mm-hmm. But marketing for the most part was ahead. Like we never really fell behind. That's the thing that I'm most dialed into at this company, which is marketing behind. And specifically, the other leaders are like, come on, chop, chop marketing. What's going on? That could just be the leader, like we need more of the leader, or it is that leader needs to hire more people. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what I'm like really dialed into, because that's the balance that we have to play. It would be, I think, rare for that to happen, though, like soon. Like, I think it's going to be a few years before that actually realistically happens.
Yeah.
But that is the one thing I'm like the most dialed into, which is a really tough balance to play if you're fractional. Still tough if you're full time, because it's easy to just get busy and you're so busy that, you know, you can't do any like real meaningful work. But yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a benefit to having someone hire someone fractional, because it's like they can't have that, I have all the time in the world and you just get busy, to your point. Whereas yeah. it has to be focused. It has to be very results driven. Like things need to happen right away, obviously, while long-term plans are made. So there's a little bit of a benefit there.
Yeah, abs. I do agree with that. In a way, having less time has forced me to like aggressively focus. So, and I think maybe to the surprise of some of the other team members, because I think a lot of them are like, oh, you're not just like doing everything. And it's no, because not everything actually is going to move the needle. It's to me, it's, you know, 80% of the result comes from 20% of the work. So that's my mantra, at least. So I'm not going to dive into literally everything. I mean, I at some point I will over time, but I'm going to focus on where I think 80% of the results are going to come from. And it's these areas. So it has forced me to aggressively focus. Something that my business coach, Charlie, says, though, is he says a great executive, no matter what type of executive, always has 2 weeks, 60 days, 2 quarters. And that's their, they always have that purview or that like bird's eye view of those time horizons.
Meaning they're looking 2 weeks out,
60 days out.
They're looking 60 days out.
Yeah.
2 quarters out, like all the time they're looking at those.
So when weekly planning or monthly planning or whatever that cadence is comes up, a great exec always has a pulse check on both, like what's coming up. Like they're like in a way they're able to see the future. I'm putting that in finger quotes.
Yep.
While also managing to that future. So if you like, so for example, in my mind, 2 quarters from now, we should already have done some activation work on the product. And I'm not planning any of that for Q2, but for Q3 I am, in hopes that we'll see the result in Q4. I should be managing to that even now. Like I should be planting seeds with product. I'm like creating my list for next week as we speak. But like I need to be planting seeds with product and planting seeds with the CEO on this and making sure that my team understands that this is going to be something that we focus on in Q3. But so it shouldn't be a surprise when I present that plan, for example, mm-hmm. and getting buy-in, obviously, to actually commit to this. Similarly, there is a growth project that I'm like, this quarter doesn't make sense, but Q3 it does. And it's focusing on enabling a specific feature so that way marketing can turn it into a growth lever. I wish I could say more, but you know, it's very hush hush.
Yes.
But I was like, oh, that's so smart, because I have those, yep, not this quarter, but next quarter. And he actually was like, where are you documenting this and making it public? And I was like, that's a great question, Charlie. Always putting me under the spot. But anyway, so a great exec has that vision. And I'm using that word to indicate like they're able to see the near future, because I know vision means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But that's what I mean when I say that. And also like short term, like just the next 2 weeks. What does the work look like?
Yeah.
And managing to that.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So hopefully that helps folks listening. All right. Thank you so much, Kim. And thanks all listeners.
We'll talk to you soon.